Good morning. My name is Ian Myers from the Johns Hopkins University Computer Science Department. And I'm here to talk to you about some research that some collaborators and I did that is a little unusual. Typically, when you talk about digital certificates and credentials, you are dealing with a computer proving something about itself or some user to another system that may well be on the other side of the planet. We focused on a somewhat different problem. We wanted to know what you could prove about yourself to someone else who was in the same room as you when you both happened to have something like a mobile phone with you. In fact, we wanted to prove statements about a specific kind of medical test result. In fact, we wanted to prove statements about test results for sexually transmitted infections or STIs. In other words, what I'm about to talk about here is how do you prove cryptographically that you do not have an STI such as HIV or syphilis? And how do you do that while maintaining user privacy? So this is somewhat of an interesting research topic because it turns out people do actually want to make assertions about their STI status to each other. It's a little surprising, but they actually do. And moreover, they do actually do this using technical means. So we're not just injecting computer security and cryptography into something that has nothing to do with it. More importantly, this is really private information. Right, people really take this sensitively, and it's not something that they're going to post on Facebook, for example. And that's sort of an important distinction to draw, because if you look at some of the other scenarios for anonymous credentials in general, it doesn't really hold as easily. For example, one of the standard ones is passport control, the idea being that if you're going through airport security, you need to prove that you're eligible to enter the country and that you are not on a no-fly list, but you don't want to give the government some ability to track everywhere you've gone on vacation or on a business trip. This is all fine and good, but the reality of the matter is that for a lot of people, you could just pull their vacation photos off of Facebook or where they've gone off of Twitter. That's not going to happen in this case. At least I don't think so, because if you're going to like post your HIV status on Facebook, you'd be into some problems. What does the like button really mean when people start hitting that, for example? At the same time, there are some rather strong incentives to actually cheat on this, right? Sex is sort of this universal human motivation, and so people will lie about all kinds of things to get it. They'll lie about their age, their marital status, their income, and so lying to someone and saying you've gotten an STI test when you haven't is pretty easy, and if you're a little bit more evil, you might lie and claim you actually don't have anything when you in fact really know you do. On the other side of the coin, you might want to lie to someone to convince them that you do have an STI as a way of getting revenge on someone you've already slept with and maybe they didn't want to sleep with you anymore. The idea being you put them through the anguish of thinking they might have something and making them get a medical test that actually could be a little invasive depending on what you lie to them about you having. So there are actually two problems here. The first one is notification. The idea here is that if you test positive for an STI, you should actually contact your previous partners and tell them so that they know to get tested. This is particularly important because a lot of STIs are actually asymptomatic, meaning you can still spread them to people, but you won't have symptoms, you won't notice. So the only way to really prevent these is to get tested and then know that you should take the appropriate precautions and get treatment. Traditionally, this was done in person by phone or via mail, and it was sometimes done with the help of a public health investigator. You basically call up people and say, hey, look, I have something, you should probably get tested yourself. This worked, but it caused some increasingly large number of problems in certain high-risk communities. First of all, the sheer number of cases of chlamydia and gonorrhea simply overwhelmed clinics' abilities to facilitate these types of notifications. Second, people simply were not honest about how many people they'd actually slept with. They didn't want to admit how promiscuous they were to someone, and so even if they could remember the exact number of partners, which depending on how many shots of tequila you'd had that night might be a little hard, they wouldn't give an honest answer. So not enough people would get notified, and as a result, more people would go on spreading these things and not getting treatment. And finally, and this is sort of how technology starts to enter into this tale, people started arranging anonymous encounters online. And so they didn't have traditional contact information. You didn't necessarily know the person's full name, you didn't have their phone number, and you certainly didn't have their actual address. And so as a result, it's not clear how you actually notify them. So with these problems in mind, a set of public health researchers in the early 2000s created InSpot, which was a website for handling this. Effectively, InSpot is eCards for STI notification. The idea being instead of, hey, you've got mail, or hey, happy birthday, it's, you probably should get tested. An example of one is on this slide. What would happen was when a patient tested positive, they would be directed to this website and would be prompted to enter the email addresses for all of their partners. And then each one of those partners would receive either an anonymous or a personalized notification saying that what they might have and what steps they should take and maybe where a clinic was. This worked quite well. It alleviated the problems we saw on the last slide. People were willing to tell a computer how many people they'd slept with because the computer isn't going to tell anyone. It worked for anonymous encounters if you had an email address for it. And it obviously scaled quite well because it didn't involve as many people. Unfortunately, of course, it raises its own set of issues, right? Of course, these notifications contain sensitive information. You can infer someone's sexual orientation from it. You can infer the number of partners, if not the actual names of them, depending on how anonymous your email address really is. And then, of course, you actually have the STI status of the person, so sensitive medical information. And, of course, InSpot sort of increased the disclosure risks here because you could, in fact, get the server compromised. You could have a malicious sysadmin. And then you also added to that the problems with the mail providers, right? Maybe the message is compromised in transit, or maybe just your spouse accidentally stumbles into your email account and finds out that you got this notification, and, well, then you're probably got some problems. Finally, because some mail providers do targeted advertising, it's possible that you would get a notification that said you might have genital herpes and then be targeted by ads for drugs that treat that, such as, say, Valtrex. On the other side of it, there are actually security issues. Obviously, you can forge these notifications pretty easily. You can, in fact, just go to the website and put in anyone's old email address. Hey, Avi, you'll probably be getting a notification at some point soon. This is actually more than just an evil problem, right? You could use it to play a prank on a friend. You could use it to harass a former partner. But really, the security issue undermines the efficacy of the system. Because if I get one of these notifications, I'm going to wonder what it is. I'm going to go to the website. And then I'm going to notice that it could have come from anybody. And then we've got a problem, because I don't really want to contemplate the idea that I have an STI. And also, because a lot of them are asymptomatic, I'm going to think, well, there's nothing wrong with me. Why should I bother to get tested? And so I won't. And I'll blithely go on ignoring this because I'll dismiss it as a prank. So this actually becomes a problem for people believing what they get. It's not just an issue of someone being sort of mean. So if notification is how you deal with getting into the situation in the first place when you have an STI, certification is sort of the flip side of that. How do you avoid that in the first place? How do you know, to the best of your ability, that your partner actually doesn't have anything? Well, you can't for certain, but you can at least know that they got tested recently and that test didn't show anything. And you could sort of ask them about that. Some dating websites, if you're a little shy, happen to have on their profiles a field for HIV status, so you could look at that. And if you want to be a little more paranoid, there is a startup, Cupid.me, that actually puts a badge on like your OkCupid profile where that basically says the company had pulled your medical records and looked at them, and you actually had a test result that was negative. Finally, using the same test result, you could just print it out and take it with you on a date. Of course, none of these really work that well, right? Obviously, people can lie and probably will. And in the case of the somewhat verified ones, it's all fine and good that there is a test result that says the person doesn't have something. But you really have no way of knowing whether the person standing before you is the person who took the test or the person who had the dating profile. So again, we have this identity problem that doesn't really readily solve itself. So with those problems in mind, we present TRUSTY, which is a protocol for STI status certification and exposure notification using mobile devices. This is the idea is to add a little bit more certainty to these means via cryptographic primitives. So what this would look like is that at some point you would want to prove this to someone. Both of you being enrolled in the system and having mobile devices, you'd pair them together. One of you would scan a QR code and get some information that allows the two devices to find themselves over the network. And then after they've done that, actually execute the cryptographic protocol we developed. And as a result of that protocol, you get two pieces of information. First, you get the person's actual test result status and their photo. This is to prevent anyone from, you know, borrowing that data. And then the second thing, not shown here, is a cryptographic token that enables you to send a notification in the future. And the notification would prove to that person both that you already executed this protocol with them and that at that point you actually have a test result from some trusted clinic that you do actually, unfortunately, have something. It won't actually specifically identify who the person they interacted with, though, is. So what are the security goals for this? Well, obviously, we don't want someone to be able to forge either a notification that they do have an STI or forge a certification that they don't. Very bad things would, of course, happen if you could do that. Almost as importantly, though, is that these protocols have to be deniable. Because you don't want the fact that you engaged in this protocol with someone last night to show up in, say, your divorce court proceedings, or in the tabloids, or if you're exceedingly unlucky, if you're getting impeached by the US Senate. It would just sort of be bad. Finally, you, of course, want everyone in here to remain anonymous, because again, the primary problem that got us into actually having a technical solution to this in the first place was people arranging anonymous encounters online, or pseudonymous. I mean, they didn't know what you looked like. And as a result, you don't really want to erode that as much as possible. So what could you do to do this? Well, the standard approaches don't really work. Digital certificates aren't really anonymous. They have all kinds of identifying information in them, and they certainly are not deniable. Once I show that certificate to someone, they can take that and show it to anyone else they want, and there's not much I can do about it. Similarly, you might want to do a physical ID card, but those are, of course, counterfeitable or expensive, and revocation is logistically problematic. So a somewhat more sophisticated approach would be to use anonymous credentials, which are a cryptographic construction. The idea is that you have a credential, effectively some message signed by a third party, such as I'm over 21 or I don't have HIV. And you can present that message to multiple different people and prove that you have a signature on it in such a way that they can't link the fact that you've shown it to one person to that you've showed it to another. All anyone learns from it is exactly the fact that you don't have HIV. They can't trace you as you go about using this credential during your day. Unfortunately, of course, the problem with this is that digital credentials, being digital, are easily copied. There's nothing that stops you from copying those bits and handing them to someone else. The anonymous credential literature talks about non-transferability properties, but what they really actually mean is they impose a tax on transferring them. Either you have all or nothing non-transferability, where if I give you the credential that says I don't have HIV, I end up giving you all of my other credentials along with it, which presumably includes something sensitive, such as, say, my bank account. Or you have PKI-assured non-transferability, where there is some external secret baked into all of the credentials. So if I give you that same HIV credential, you get some other juicy piece of information, like, say, my ATM PIN number. Unfortunately, neither of these really work for our purposes. All or nothing non-transferability is all nice and good, but there aren't really widely used anonymous credential systems, so we can't tie anything into it because there is nothing. And for PKI-assured non-transferability, it's not clear what an appropriate secret would be that someone wouldn't change. For example, if I give you my PIN number, I'm obviously going to go change that 5 minutes later no matter what. So now we have a problem. We can obviously make these credentials non-transferable by simply embedding your photograph in them. But if we do that, when you show that to someone else, they now do have cryptographic proof that there is a message that, hey, I don't have HIV, for example, and a photo attached to it. Because you do prove that you own the credential, and that proof can be shown to other people. So that sort of breaks the deniability problem that we wanted. So, finally, this doesn't work because for notification, we can't really use anonymous credentials as a black box construction, excuse me. Because notification involves proving that you previously interacted with someone. So it involves peeling away a little bit of the anonymity you'd be dealing with. And anonymous credentials don't allow that, except for revocation, which it turns out peels back too much of the anonymity. So our approach is, in fact, to use photos combined with assigned STI status. Actually, the signature is over both the photo and the test result. And we're going to use clinics as the trusted party to actually do the signing. And this is actually quite nice because clinics already exist. They're already regulated, and they're already trusted with sensitive information. So we have something that's an interesting approach here because we don't have to create a trusted authority out of whole cloth. We don't have to deal with the problems of doing so that have plagued, say, digital certificates for SSL. What we are going to do to avoid the problem of anonymous credentials is use a deniable construction for showing the fact that you have a status, the STI status and a photo. And as a result, no one will be able to show that to anyone else and prove anything. Right? You'll be able to, in fact, fabricate all of this stuff if you're not one of the parties in it. So what might this look like before we get into details? So this is a mock-up of an app. We don't have an actual app yet. You have buttons, of course, to check if you've gotten a notification, to send a notification to someone, and then more importantly, to share your STI status. If you press that last button, you will be prompted to pair the phones. And as a result, you either get the page you see there with the green on it, which is that nothing's wrong, or you might see something that looks like the other one, where something's wrong, the person has something, one of their tests never happened, and one of them is simply too old. So really the question is, of course, how do you get to that last slide from pairing the phones, and how do you do it while doing what we want? So with that, I'll have to give you a little bit of cryptographic background. So the first primitive we are going to use is called non-interactive zero-knowledge proofs of knowledge. These are effectively proofs that you know some value satisfying an equation that don't reveal that value. For example, we can prove that we know the discrete log of h, i.e. we know x such that g to the x equals h, and we do not actually reveal the value x. Notationally, this is denoted as you see here. Traditionally, the stuff to the your left, my right of the colon is secret, so in this case, x. And the stuff after that is, in fact, public, with the exception of anything that went before there. And so you're proving that you know the equation, the discrete log of h. The second primitive we're going to use sort of builds on this, signatures with efficient protocols. These are standard digital signatures with one additional property, which is you can prove that you have a signed message without actually revealing the signature. So if we have a signature sigma, you denote this as following. We don't reveal the signature, but we do prove that for a known public key and a known message, the signature is actually valid. This is, again, important because if you revealed the signature, someone would be able to trace every time you went back and used it, and that would just ruin everything. Finally, the next last primitive we're going to use are commitments. The idea here is that you commit to a value in advance that you want to be remain secret. And then at some point in the future, you open the commitment and reveal the value. Anybody watching this is assured that the value hasn't been changed in the intervening time period, right? So it's kind of like asking someone to guess a number in your head, and before you start, you write the number down, put it in an envelope, and put it on the table. And then when they get the number wrong, you prove to them that you didn't change what you were thinking of by opening the envelope. And of course, you can actually prove that you know how to open a commitment without revealing the value using similar zero-knowledge proof techniques. So the technique that we are going to use here is if Alice and Bob are actually already enrolled in the system, they've already gotten some amount of test results, and they have the mobile app with them, and Alice wants to prove this. Alice wants to prove to Bob that she does not have an STI. Alice is going to construct a non-interactive zero-knowledge proof of knowledge that she has one of two possible predicates. Either she's going to claim that she knows a number that Bob is committed to, or that she actually has a signature on her STI status and the photo. Again, she's not going to actually reveal the signature, but she's going to prove that she has it. So to Bob, this actually is still valid, because Bob, of course, knows that he didn't tell Alice the number he committed to, and as a result, the only way Alice could have satisfied the proof is by satisfying the second predicate, i.e. that she has the signature. And since Bob knows by the properties of the signature scheme that the signature is valid and well-formed, Bob now knows that Alice actually did get a test from the clinic that signed it, and that Alice did not have whatever it is she didn't have at that point in time. However, were Bob to show this transcript of this, or anyone else to show a transcript of this to anybody, that logic doesn't work because there is no proof that Bob didn't reveal the number to someone. In fact, because Bob knows the number, he could have, in fact, forged the entire proof by fulfilling the first predicate and then put in whatever he wanted for the second predicate. Like, he could have made any number of absurd assertions in there, and the proof would still be valid. This is, in practice, the protocol for this is a little more complicated. Bob will, in fact, first commit to a random nonce and send it to Alice. Alice then generates the proof we outlined earlier, right? She proves that she has a signature on the hash of her photo, the various STI test results, such as, you know, do you have HIV, do you have syphilis, do you have gonorrhea, and lastly, some timestamp of when she got tested. Or she will prove that she actually knows the value that Bob has in the commitment, the nonce. However, Alice can't actually reveal this proof at this point. She has to, in fact, publish a commitment to it instead. The reason for this is that if she revealed the proof and Bob went around publishing it, Alice would, of course, say, well, but Bob, you know the nonce, and so you could have forged all of this. And Bob's response could, in fact, be, if Bob is very evil, well, that's interesting. I didn't actually give you a commitment. I gave you a random group element, and there's no one who knows the value I committed to because it doesn't exist. It's computationally infeasible to calculate that second predicate that you know the opening of the commitment. As a result, anybody who looks at the proof then would know that Alice had to fulfill the first predicate to generate the proof, and therefore you actually know for a fact that Alice, someone with Alice's photo and Alice's STI status exists, and that is confirmable. So to guard against this, Alice doesn't immediately reveal the proof. Instead, Alice waits until Bob reveals the actual nonce. And now, of course, Alice is assured that there actually is a value and that someone actually could know it and that someone could fulfill the proof that way. Of course, Bob is still fine with this because commitments are non-malleable, Bob knows that Alice didn't change the proof from when she wrote it and didn't know the nonce to when she revealed it and did know the nonce. And so Bob still knows that Alice actually has a signature on this message, and therefore he knows that she does not have whatever it is she's asserting she does not have. So what we actually need to finish doing is completing the application. It turns out that the tooling for dealing with these kind of zero-knowledge proofs is not the most pleasant thing to work with, and it took a while. More interestingly, from a research perspective, there are a couple of other things we want to do. We'd like to be able to mark users as exposed if several of their partners have actually tested positive. The reasoning for this is that if we don't do this and you actually end up contracting some disease, you could still keep going around and engaging this protocol correctly because your test result won't really be invalid until it's 6 months or a year old. And this is sort of quite problematic. So what we'd like to do is, if this happened, you'd start accumulating marks as being exposed and possibly that you're a vector for this. And therefore, if someone engages in this protocol with you, they'd see this and know that it was a risk and would make their decision appropriately. It's a little difficult to do while preserving some notion of anonymity, but it probably is possible. Another research topic is doing propagating notifications. The idea being here that if, for example, someone you slept with slept with someone else who then got something, you might want to find out about it. I'm not really sure that this is the best thing in this exact context. That seems like, frankly, far too much information about who you're dealing with. However, propagating information cryptographically across a social graph seems like an interesting topic for a paper or maybe just a title. I'm not really sure. And then finally, and this was a suggestion from one of the medical collaborators on the project, you might want to compute the exposure risk for users instead of just saying whether they have something. Actually, there's sort of two parts to this. Either you might want to, when you engage in this protocol, get some risk factor out of it, the end of it saying, well, this person, you know, we have the test results saying they don't have anything, and they probably haven't gotten anything since then, or maybe they have. And then you also might want to compute, just purely as sort of public health data, what the actual propagation rate of STIs is across the network, because you would actually sort of have the data to do that. Though doing it in an anonymous fashion is tricky, and there's a lot of work that you'd have to do to get it to work. So with that, questions, comments, anything else?
So the what type of crypto primitives are you using to implement the zero knowledge proofs, like CL signatures?
So it is CL signatures. And
okay. And do you have like kind of prediction on how they would perform, like performance wise? Like if you expect some, you know, two people to bump mobile devices together to wait half an hour for to get the results, or?
I think those can be done faster than that, but we don't have any hard performance numbers yet. There are some papers, in fact, I got some comments in the reviews that do have performance numbers, and my understanding is they're not that bad.
For like, kind of smart card implementations of these systems, it's kind of not that great, so I don't know if the mobile phones are...
I mean, mobile phones are, you know, orders of magnitude faster than the smart card.
Right, right.
So I think we're good there.
Future work, basically.
Yeah.
All right. It's not a lot of computation, and I mean, there is a danger that it'll kill the mood before it finishes the computation.
I mean, so worst case, you'd have to start, you know, do this as you start flirting with the person, and then by the end of the protocol, they're hopefully interested in you and the result's what you want.
Hey, neat work. So I guess the assumption here is that people who use this app keep their contact information current with the clinic so that they can be contacted or have a current version of the app running so that they can be contacted after the fact?
Yeah, the app would have to be doing some kind of polling. So it's actually kind of interesting how you send the notification without having some problems with actually de-anonymizing people, but it is doable.
Okay. And then follow up to that, are you actually trying to communicate with any public health clinics about deploying this?
There's some work, preliminary work on talking about that. Unfortunately, we've got two different holders to get over. You've got sort of the IRB approval for doing research, and then you've got the standard startup problem when you're doing an application of you've got to get, pardon the pun, sufficient market penetration to actually make this useful. And how to do both of those and do both of those simultaneously is somewhat problematic. The best hope I have is that we get someone who has some college campus where you could do it because it's reasonably small.
Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest, is rather than starting at like a random clinic as a college health center.
But. Yeah.
All right, thank you.
One thing nice about the domain-specific aspect of the work is it obviously really channeled your understanding the requirements here and thinking about what would be the risks and what you'd like to protect and what are, mm-hmm. you know, so on. I wanted to speculate on how generalizable this solution is. In other words, is this very particular to STDs, or is it, you know, something that you might use? I don't know. Romney could prove that he actually did pay taxes, or something like that. So, you know, what kind of generalizability would you have here?
So the techniques used are quite generalizable. A lot of the work went into dealing with specific problems that aren't necessarily applicable. In fact, they're not even applicable necessarily to slightly different domains. So one of the suggestions that almost everyone I told this idea to at start was, well, could you use this, for example, to deal with porn stars because they have to get tested quite regularly? And of course, the problem there is, if you think about it for a second, there really isn't that much of a privacy motivator in that case because everything's on videotape. So you can generalize the techniques, but a lot of the specific problems are specific. But yeah, anonymous credentials can be used to prove you paid your tax returns or do anything like that. And that's a lot of work that people have done with that. Wish I had done it myself, but.
Two questions. First, are you concerned that the exchange of photos or basically essentially delivering a photo to the other party's device that might be vulnerable to face recognition, photo recognition attacks?
So that actually is a large problem. The sort of hand-wavy solution around it is that if people are arranging things via online dating websites, you usually already have a photo of yourself on it. So that's sort of the acceptable risk in that case.
Yeah, but if I don't know who you are.
If you don't know who I am at all, then this becomes a little different. And maybe there's some notion that you, instead of providing a photo, you could provide a sketch of someone, but that still works for face recognition. At that point, your solution basically has to degenerate to doing DRM on the phone, so hoping someone can't keep a copy of that. So it is a little dicey. But the reality of the, sort of the Wild West of people on online dating sites is you already are putting photos up. And that has bitten people before, right? The standard thing is you find some profile of someone, and then you go find their Facebook profile, and they use the same photo, and now you're like, oh, well, I actually know who you are. Mm-hmm. That's sort of an intrinsic risk in how people are arranging these things right now.
Okay. Second, to what you were saying about porn stars before, so this is a revocation thing. So you're basically talking about how quickly you revoke a particular assertion. Mm-hmm. So implication here is that you've got to reach back to a third party that's going to handle the revocation. And what's the risk of that third party being attacked?
So the idea in the construction we presented here is that there isn't the third party doesn't learn anything about who you've hooked up with because you have credentials that are only binding on the fact that you did engage with the person, not that you are some specific identifier. So hopefully the worst you could do if you compromise a third party is you could generate notifications to anybody, but you wouldn't know who, that they have something. Because obviously the clinic can just start signing results for anybody. Mm-hmm. But that's, I think, the only risk you have in this case. If we start doing some of the other, some of the other techniques of like future research, then you've got more interesting problems because you've got some loss of anonymity that the third party is taking care of, and that's a disclosure risk, and a severe one, so you have to be very careful about doing that.
Yeah. Thanks.